What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I am the ferryman.
In the shadows of the afterlife, the ferryman of souls guides America's most influential spirits to their eternal rest.
Where are you taking me?
Are you death?
This road is not on any map.
How much for a ticket?
All I ask for in payment is a tale.
I don't know who got to Kennedy first.
And the devastation those first bombs caused.
I've never been to hell, but I know intimately the hymns of the damned.
Binge this season of The Passage now. Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
It's a hot summer day in August 1963. A crowd of more than 200,000 people is gathered before the Lincoln Memorial in Washington, D.C. You know the story. You definitely know the speech.
I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed.
But do you know the man responsible for putting Martin Luther King Jr. behind that podium? The man who organized the March on Washington? You can see him in video footage of the historic moment. He is standing on Dr. King's right. And you can even hear him bellowing his approval when King reaches the end of his famous speech.
Free at last! Free at last! Thank God Almighty! We are free at last!
The man next to Dr. King is Bayard Rustin. As we learned in episode one, Rustin first came to King's aid during the Montgomery bus boycott. The Quaker activist was King's mentor, and it was Rustin, not King, who many fellow activists looked to early on as the potential father of the civil rights movement. Bayard Rustin was a master strategist, a tireless organizer, and an outright force of nature in the civil rights movement. And more than any other person, he was responsible for injecting nonviolent protest into the Black freedom struggle. So why have so many of us never heard of him? Well, Rustin was not only a Black man, he was a gay man as well. And in 20th century America, those two facts would prove too difficult for even a man as talented as Rustin to fully overcome.
Jim Crow, no, you don't have to ride Jim Crow. On June the 3rd, the High Court said, when you ride in the state, Jim Crow is dead. You don't have to ride Jim Crow.
I'm Sean Braswell, and this is The Thread. This season, we are pulling the thread on a powerful and revolutionary idea, nonviolent resistance. In episode one, we saw how a young Martin Luther King Jr. elevated the U.S. civil rights movement using nonviolence. In this episode, we pull back the curtain on Bayard Rustin, the man who helped King to take up the banner of nonviolence in the first place. Bayard Rustin's life teaches us that sometimes it is the people that we don't learn about in history class that make the biggest impact on our lives. If you're joining us for the first time, we encourage you to go back and listen to episode one.
When united action turns the tide and black and white sit side by side, oh, someday we'll all be free.
In 1956, Martin Luther King Jr., with the help of Bayard Rustin, unveiled a new weapon to combat racial injustice in the United States.
For several weeks now, we, the Negro citizens of Montgomery, have been involved in a nonviolent protest against the injustices which we have experienced on the buses for a number of years.
Rustin discussed the effect of the Montgomery boycott in a 1979 interview.
Oh, I think if there had been any violence at all, they were prepared to deal with that. What they could not deal with were people who were not being violent. And there was a kind of moral jiu-jitsu going on, a moral wrestling. And they didn't know how to put their hands on us because it was so intensely nonviolent.
This is Rustin biographer John D'Amelio.
I interviewed many of the pacifists who worked with Rustin in the 1940s and early 50s. And at some point in almost every interview I did, each one of them would say some equivalent to, "We thought he would be the American Gandhi." Now think about that. Think about what that means about how powerful they perceived Rustin to be as a model of nonviolent activism.
Every fiber in Rustin's being was dedicated to the principles of nonviolence. And more than any other person, he was the one responsible for launching King's famous dream. Still, Rustin makes no more than a cameo appearance in most history books about the time. This is civil rights leader Timothy Jenkins, who knew Rustin personally.
No, I don't think that Bayard is historically fully appreciated for his importance. And I don't think that he was appreciated fully when he was alive.
Rustin actually had an experience similar to Rosa Parks on a segregated bus 13 years before he joined King in Montgomery. John D'Amelio explains.
He's traveling through the South and on a bus in Tennessee. He refuses to go to the back and puts himself in the front of the bus where he is sitting next to white passengers in rows reserved for whites. The bus driver calls the police.
Soon Rustin hears sirens. Four police officers board the bus and approach Rustin. He patiently explains to them that he has a right to sit there. He points to a young white child sitting nearby and says that if he moves to the back of the bus, he will be, quote, depriving that child of the knowledge that there is an injustice here. The officers drag Rustin from the bus.
The police start beating him. Rustin doesn't defend himself.
Rustin, a tall 30-year-old black man, extends his arms parallel to the ground as the officers begin to hit him with their clubs. He tells them there is no need to beat him. He is not resisting.
When they take him to the police station, there is more physical assault.
The hallway leading to the police captain's office is lined with officers on both sides. Rustin is tossed from one to another. He endures more blows. His clothes are ripped.
And he doesn't resist.
Rustin is then taken into the captain's office, where he calmly asks, "What can I do for you?" The angry captain leans in and yells at Rustin, quote, "You're supposed to be scared when you come in here." But Bayard Rustin wasn't scared. At times, he was utterly fearless.
Rustin's commitment to nonviolence was total and complete. It wasn't simply a political tactic that he used in a demonstration. It was the way he intended to live his life and he expected himself to. And there were many instances in Rustin's life where, confronted with beatings by police or demonstrators, he never fought back.
Take this incident at a demonstration in 1951. Rustin was attacked with a stick by an angry spectator. He picked up a stick of his own. Then he handed his attacker the second stick and asked him if he wanted to use both. The disoriented man threw the two sticks down and stormed away. Rustin explained the logic of his nonviolent approach in a later interview.
There are three ways to deal with injustice. One is to accept it slavishly, or one can resist it with arms, or one can use nonviolence. The man who believes in nonviolence is prepared to be harmed, to be crushed, but he will never crush others.
Rustin grew up in Westchester, Pennsylvania, which was very much a Quaker town. It had been a stop on the Underground Railroad in the 19th century. His grandmother, Julia, who raised him, worked in the households of Quaker families, and so Quakerism was a part of his life.
Rustin was a good athlete and a lover of the arts. He would often recite classical poems aloud at school, even while at football practice. In the late 1930s, Rustin moved to New York. He attended City College and paid his bills by singing in Greenwich Village nightclubs. Then he landed his first real job.
He actually starts working for an organization called the Fellowship of Reconciliation, which was a pacifist organization whose membership was mostly ministers committed to the philosophy and practice of nonviolence. It's not a great time to be a pacifist in the United States. The attack on Pearl Harbor comes 3 months later.
Most Americans rallied to support the war effort. Rustin did not.
I'm a Quaker, and as everyone knows, Quakers for 300 years have, on conscientious grounds, been against participating in war.
But participation was mandatory.
So when he finally received the call to military service, Rustin had made the decision that he was not going to cooperate in any way with the military.
Rustin was arrested. He waived his right to trial, pled guilty, and received a 3-year sentence. He was 31 years old when he entered Ashland Prison in Kentucky.
He's classified almost from the beginning as a notorious offender, which means that they are watching his every move. He's also a black man in a primarily white movement going to a prison that is racially segregated. And so Rustin, ever the activist, is now in federal prison but is organizing prisoners to resist segregation.
Thanks to Rustin, the prison athletic program was soon integrated, and prisoners were allowed to move between the white and colored sections of the prison. But not all of the prisoners cared for Rustin's integration efforts.
A number of the prisoners are white Southerners themselves, and at a certain point, one of them is enraged at the way Rustin is challenging segregation and goes after him with a stick. And there are other people around, and Rustin just puts his hands up to try to protect his face from injury, but doesn't resist in any way. When fellow prisoners try to protect him, he tells them no.
Rustin's attacker continued to rain violent blows on him. And again, Rustin calmly responded, "You can't hurt me." The other prisoner received no punishment for the incident. Rustin was disciplined by the warden. His activism had not made him popular with prison officials. They soon learned that the formidable organizer had an Achilles heel, at least given the time in which he lived.
Rustin is a gay man in an era where no one accepts being gay. And the prison officials realize that they can expose his sexuality, and they bring him up on charges of sexual misconduct.
Rustin's integration efforts came to a halt.
They put him in solitary confinement. It's a horrendous experience for him. I found in the archives 2 mugshots of Rustin. The first one, when he arrives in prison, he looks so serene, as if, "You can't do anything to me." The second one is taken after he's been in isolation for several months, and the pain in his face is unmistakable.
It was not the last time in Rustin's life that his sexual orientation would provoke such a response and derail his career. Bayard Rustin was released from prison in 1946, and at that time the U.S. Supreme Court handed down a decision holding that segregation in interstate transportation was unconstitutional. Here was a golden opportunity for Rustin to use nonviolence to test the enforcement of the new law.
They create an organization called CORE, the Congress of Racial Equality.
And so, nearly 15 years before the famous Freedom Riders hit the road during the 1960s, Rustin helped recruit a team of 14 men, divided equally by race, to ride in pairs on buses throughout the South. Other black civil rights leaders, including the NAACP, wanted no part of the plan. The future Supreme Court Justice, Thurgood Marshall, told Rustin, "You are insane to try this. Just dumb." Rustin knew the risks. His team endured 12 arrests and numerous threats of violence along the way. In North Carolina, four of the riders, including Rustin, were dragged from the bus and arrested. Rustin would later serve time on a chain gang as a result. But the organized acts of non-cooperation that Rustin and his team engaged in helped lay the groundwork for future acts of nonviolent protest during the civil rights movement of the 1950s and 60s.
The journey was an important experiment. It also, in a sense, demonstrated in 1947 that the country wasn't yet ready or prepared to build a mass movement. And so it became an example, a model of what you could do, even if the impact wasn't dramatic.
By the early 1950s, Bayard Rustin was a reformer to be reckoned with, but his sexual orientation continued to be a problem in the activist community. Rustin never pretended to be a straight man, but during the mid-20th century in the United States, it was not safe to come out as a gay one.
One never knows when the homosexual is about. He may appear normal, and it may be too late when you discover he is mentally ill. So keep with your group. And don't go off alone with strangers unless you have the permission of your parent or teacher.
Every state in the nation criminalized homosexual behavior at the time. This is civil rights leader Timothy Jenkins again.
One of the things that he felt he suffered was the double burden, or as he sometimes so called it, the double cross of being black and also being gay. And he appreciated that the hostile forces on the question of race were also hostile on the forces of sexual orientation. And he felt that he was being discriminated against on both counts.
Such discrimination made it very difficult to have a social life. John DeMilio again.
Also in those years, if you're gay and the gay world is hidden and you're looking to meet other gay men, you engage in what was called at that time street cruising. And Rustin, both as a gay man and as a black man, was so susceptible to the police. And a number of times in the 40s, he was arrested for street cruising, lewd conduct.
Then another incident occurred that would turn Rustin's world upside down.
In 1953, he's in California giving talks and meeting with Quaker and pacifist groups. And in the middle of the night, the police in Pasadena find him in a parked car with two white men and arrest all three of them for performing lewd acts.
Rustin's employers at the Fellowship of Reconciliation punished him.
So Rustin is let go. This is not only a pacifist organization built on certain kinds of moral principles, but it's an organization primarily of ministers. And here, a key staff person has been arrested and convicted of a morals charge.
Rustin lost almost everything he had. The man who had tried so hard to cast himself as a principled activist had been branded a sex offender.
He has to suddenly start strategizing how to be an activist who remains invisible to the public.
It would take Rustin years to fight his way off the sidelines of the civil rights struggle. Then, in 1955, he saw an opportunity to get back in the game. That opportunity was the bus boycott in Montgomery, Alabama. A young, dynamic preacher named Martin Luther King started to appear on the national news. It was clear to many of those in the civil rights struggle that the boycott represented a turning point.
As word of the bus boycott travels north, for Rustin, this is his dream. He's been waiting half of a lifetime for something like this to happen. instead of an action that five people engage in and get arrested and that's it, a whole community is joining together to resist racial segregation.
Rustin and other Northern pacifists were worried that the black community in Montgomery might resort to violence after King's house was bombed. Rustin decided to go to Montgomery to lend his support. This is King biographer David Garrow.
Now, in 1956, being an uncloseted homosexual, especially within black America, made someone untouchable in many quarters. And so, even though Byard hastens to Montgomery to advise King, others in New York are worried whether those aspects of Byard's history might be used against him.
Rustin, who recognized these concerns, kept a low profile. He did not go out after dark alone. He often consulted with King over the phone. Rustin soon found himself at the heart of one of the most significant protests in American history.
Rustin sees his key work as helping to develop Dr. King as a nationally recognized leader.
In the years following Montgomery, Rustin made himself indispensable to King and to the civil rights movement. Rustin remained behind the scenes, but if you look closely, you could discern his hand almost everywhere. Rustin became an advisor to King. He also introduced King to Northern activists, labor leaders, and other prominent individuals who became major financial supporters of the movement. Timothy Jenkins again.
I came to know Byard Rustin as a voice for passive resistance in a very important way. And of course, he inspired much of the leadership that led to the political revolution of the South to pursue the course of tactics as opposed to just demonstrations.
Rustin fought his way back from the margins to shape the principles and methods of the civil rights movement. Then came his biggest test yet. Up next, the eyes of America and the world turned to the steps of the Lincoln Memorial in the summer of 1963. The March on Washington for Jobs and Freedom is the single most significant demonstration in U.S. history, the event that launched Dr. King's famous dream. The man who organized that march was Byard Rustin, but only after he survived the efforts of some of the most powerful men in America to bring the march to its knees.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley, and recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rock the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant. Players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James. LeBron James.
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court, and what's next. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Because of his sexual orientation and criminal record, Bayard Rustin tried to coordinate the March on Washington under the radar. It wasn't easy. And by early August, just weeks before the march, his role became more public.
And at one point even, the Washington Post, I think, actually describes him as Mr. March on Washington. And the FBI does an investigation. It gathers whatever material it can find on Rustin, including his arrest in Pasadena on sex charges, and provides that information to Strom Thurmond, who is a white segregationist senator from South Carolina. And Thurmond gets up more than once on the floor of the Senate and reads into the congressional record all of this condemning information about Rustin.
The attack did not have its intended effect. Rustin's fellow civil rights leaders leapt to his defense.
What's so important about 1963 in Rustin's life and the history of nonviolence is that because the march was so visible and so important, this time when Rustin is attacked for his sexuality, all of the organizational leaders come together and explicitly stand by him and defend him so that he doesn't lose his role as organizer of the March on Washington.
I remember about 5:30 in the morning, I was out on the mall and the press was surrounding me and was saying, Mr. Rustin, what's happening? You said there were going to be 250,000 people and there are scarcely a half dozen here. I remember taking out of my pocket a blank sheet of paper and taking my watch out of the other pocket. I looked at my watch and the blank sheet of paper and I said, gentlemen, everything is going according to Hoyle. And I was terrified that people weren't going to show up.
But they did. It was an event like the nation had never witnessed before.
The crowd, 250,000 people, gathered on the mall and they heard speeches that were inspiring, and sometimes they were rousing speeches as well.
Rustin himself addressed the massive crowd.
The first demand is that we have effective civil rights legislation, no compromise, no filibuster, and that it include public accommodations, decent housing, integrated education, FAPC, and the right to vote. What do you say?
But of course, the main event and the final speaker, thanks to Rustin's own plan, was Martin Luther King.
And it's just an astounding success. And of course, it gives Dr. King an even more visible platform to be a national leader.
And there was not a hint of violence anywhere. Rustin himself later summarized it.
Not a single person was arrested in Washington that day. Not a single person was drunk that day or picked up for drunkenness. There were no major problems of any kind. The march ended for me when we had finally made sure we had not left one piece of paper, not a cup, nothing.
Bayard Rustin continued to fight for justice in the decades ahead. In the 1980s, at the end of his life, he turned his attention to gay rights. Through it all, Rustin consistently downplayed himself.
Well, my role was a very simple role. It was a role of saying to Martin Luther King, I have certain skills. I have skills which are good at analyzing problems. I have skills that are good in planning and executing. I do not consider myself a leader. I consider myself a spokesman for a given point of view.
Barack Obama awarded Rustin the Presidential Medal of Freedom in 2013, 50 years after the historic March on Washington.
The White House has announced it'll posthumously award the highest civilian honor in the United States, the Presidential Medal of Freedom, to the trailblazing civil rights activist Bayard Rustin.
It was a fitting honor for a man who gave so much to the cause of freedom.
Working in the background, away from the headlines, Rustin changed life for millions of people.
Rustin's own outlook and life, however, were largely shaped by another man, one that he never met, but who also changed life for millions of people on the other side of the globe. During the 1920s and 30s, the world grew captivated by a small man in a loincloth taking on an empire in India.
It wasn't simply that Gandhi had a personal commitment to nonviolence, but Gandhi was showing, at least from a distance, that preaching and practicing nonviolence could be a route to massive social change.
Gandhi's commitment and methods were a revelation for Rustin. He began a lifelong campaign to introduce Gandhi's nonviolent tactics into the struggle for racial justice in the United States.
He finally made it to India late 48, the very beginning of 49. And unfortunately, when he finally did make the trip, Gandhi had already passed away. But it was a powerful trip for him. And if anything, it increased the attractiveness of nonviolence as a route to social change and political activism.
Rustin traveled around India for almost 2 months. He returned to the United States and continued to preach Gandhian nonviolence to the black community. Rustin liked to tell audiences that fighting injustice required, quote, angelic troublemakers.
Our power is in our ability to make things unworkable. The only weapon we have is our bodies, and we need to tuck them in places so wheels don't turn.
8 years later, Bayard Rustin, the ultimate angelic troublemaker, put that principle into action, making sure that the wheels did not turn in Montgomery, Alabama. Together, Rustin and Martin Luther King Jr. made things unworkable for those white leaders in the South who wished to preserve a segregated society. But the true ideological father of King and Rustin's nonviolent movement was not black or even American. In the next episode, we journey to India and South Africa to explore the remarkable life of Mohandas Gandhi, the man who proved that nonviolence could achieve major political reforms and even take down an entire empire.
You don't have to ride Jim Crow. No, you don't have to ride Jim Crow. On June the 3rd, the High Court said, when you ride in a state, Jim Crow is dead. You don't have
The Thread is produced by Libby Coleman, Robert Kulos, Sophia Perpetua, and me, Sean Braswell. Chris Hoff engineered our show. This episode features Bayard Rustin performing a song called You Don't Have to Ride Jim Crow. To learn more about The Thread, visit Aussie.com/The Thread, all one word. And make sure to subscribe to The Thread on Apple Podcasts. Follow us on iHeartRadio or listen wherever you get your podcasts. Check us out at Aussie.com or on Twitter and Facebook. If you love surprising, engaging stories from history, look no further than the flashback section of Aussie.com. That's OZY.com.
We'll all be free. Yes, someday we'll all be free. When united action turns the tide and black and white sit side by side. Oh, someday we'll all be free.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
I am the ferryman.
In the shadows of the afterlife, the ferryman of souls guides America's most influential spirits to their eternal rest.
Where are you taking me?
Are you death? This road is not on any map.
How much for a ticket?
All I ask for in payment is a tail.
I don't know who got to Kennedy first.
And the devastation those first bombs caused.
I've never been to hell, but I know intimately the hymns of the damned.
Binge this season of The Passage now.
Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.